Good evening, everybody. I hope everybody had a good yontif. Be'ezus Hashem, we're moving, I guess, towards Kabbalah Satayra. Okay, so we're holding here in the Maamar Ikrim, Ik Aleph. It's in the first paragraph, last two times, and then we saw peace on Pesach, and now we're going to see a little bit further. I want to add one point before we start. That it's the there's a lot of time spent here on things that are extremely abstract, maybe a bit doesn't seem to be relevant to things, but there's a klal always, if the fundamentals are in accurately and the way they should be, it becomes easier later to deal with things. And you're able to explain it in light of certain fundamentals. So there's going to be here a bit of a lot spent on things that are very fundamental, but it will obviously later come into play. B'nogei lemaisa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is shalem totally. Ein bo shum chisaron klal ve'ikar. There is nothing lacking, which automatically is going to create an issue when we start speaking about why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, because that implies that there was some need. It just by definition, when I say why, I'm implying some sort of lack, some sort of need. He is not dependent on anyone. Velo mispa'il mizulose klal, and is not affected by the other. Once again, this is going to create an issue when we start talking about the desire for HaKadosh Baruch Hu for us to do mitzvahs and averus. We live with a vocabulary that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do mitzvahs. He's happy when we do mitzvahs. It pleases him. Tremendous amount of words describing that, and we're going to have to deal with it when we get to it. But understand that that's something that is, on the face of it, contradicts these ikrim. And these ikrim are solid. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot need or want anything because that implies a lack in him. Next, Ein haschol lemitziusei v'lo seif klal. It has no beginning and no end. Pirush, shalonis hava acha heda, v'levoya heda klal. It did not come into being after a vacuum, nor did does it does a vacuum, so to speak, a vacuum with a capital V. Now, there's a lack of thing, does not affect it. Aval tamid hoya v'tamid yeh, I efsha heyadre klal klal. It's impossible for him not to be. Let's talk about this a minute. The Rambam speaks a lot about this point. Aristotle believed in a divine being. He also believed that the world is endless, time is endless, and therefore existence of the world is endless. The Rambam is argues vehemently against it. The Rambam's point is it's wrong. The Rambam says he can reconcile Emunah, if need to be, he'd be able to reconcile with that as well. Doesn't say exactly how, but he says that it's possible. But let's try to understand a bit the logic of it. And what I mean, the logic of this is using the own points that have been built up until now, this is going to have to follow. If I say that until, I don't know, until Rosh Chodesh Iyar, this room was empty, and on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, this room got a table or a desk or a person or whatever. So my question is going to be, why? So if I say, what do you mean? A table is natural to this. To this room. So the answer would be, oh, if it's natural to it, how could the room have existed without a table? In other words, if I define something that's essential to it, let's take an example. If I teach you, let's say I'm teaching physics or chemistry, and I tell you it is the property of this and this a substance that it reacts with hydrogen or with oxygen, fine. I tell you that it's the property of this only from the year 1750 onwards. You will scratch your head and ask, is this kind of a stupid Purim joke? What do you mean it's the property of this object from 1750 onwards? I can say that from 1750 onwards, they mandated that lead bars be this size. But I can't say it's the property of this from a certain time. It doesn't make any sense. By saying something is a property of something, I'm defining the thing itself. Something can't change definition in the middle. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence is pure existence, and it's not because something happened, so what does it mean it only happened at a certain point in time? It's by definition like that, and therefore there cannot be no haschala and no soif. When an element combine and they form a compound, I can say, okay, this became a compound from this and this point, and it will probably disintegrate at this and this point. But if something is an element, I define it as always having been like that. Yes, we do know elements can also disintegrate because they're also not the simplest form. But anytime you're defining something simple, so time by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the word before just doesn't have any meaning by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the word after doesn't have any meaning. Because it's not just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is eternal in the sense he's got some phenomenal genes and he lives very, very long. It's eternal in the sense that we're defining something that existence is the essence of it. And therefore, before and after has no meaning whatsoever. Husibas kol ha'avayim ve'ein alav siba acheres elohu me'asu emuchach ha'metzius. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always is the cause of anything else that exists. So whenever I'm talking about things, I always must trace it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is no thing in the world that has its own metzius, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no cause for the reason we said before. So we have a definition of God that's extremely different than a simple Gaisha definition of like a kind of a very, very strong master who commandavis and they look to define HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a positive way. He's the strongest, the smartest, the wisest, the greatest, the longest lived, the eternal. They also look at eternal as being kind of a way of long living. It's not. We define HaKadosh Baruch Hu by what we can say about him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not caused, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not limited, and therefore any type of reference to before or after is a meaningless reference. Just like saying, since when have magnets attracted metal? That's a nonsense question. If that is a core property of metals to be attracted by a magnet, and vice versa, then that always existed. Okay. Oitzar sheteida, shamotzi yisbar shmoy ein boi shum harkava v'leribu b'shum panim. Part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being echad means that it's not a compound of anything else, and there are not many. Elohu pashet betachis hapshitus. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Poshek Tas HaPshitus means it's not many pieces. It's one piece, one entity reflecting itself in many ways. I want to say over a Maral, he speaks about Yotze Or Vare Choshech, and he talks about why is it that we need to have midas yoyim b'layla of midas layla b'yoyim? The halacha is the first bracha towards Krishna. Krishna is the bracha affirming, Krishna is the statement affirming HaKadosh Baruch Hu's achdus. And Chazal wa mesakin brachas for it. the brachas they were misakin for it, the first one is the bracha of Oyer, which sort of encompasses the entire scope of the universe. And the second one is Klal Yisrael Torah. Now, the Gemara says you must have Midas Yom B'Layla Midas Ayel B'Yayim. You must have the you must have a mention of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the creator of light and day, both of them in Sai Shachar Sai Arvis. So the Maral asks why, and the Pashto Pshat is because the Goyim believed that light and dark were two different gods. Good and bad are two different gods. That type of Indian, and we deny that. So Ra'al says, for that would be enough to deny in the morning that anyone but God makes light, and at night to deny anyone but God makes darkness. So Ra'al says it's not enough to say that God makes light and God makes dark, because in a certain sense we would be talking about two parts of God. We have to speak of one entity where both are part of one picture. Let's give an example. Imagine people are reminiscing about a teacher they have. And, you know, one says, you know, I remember him as a very, very particularly angry, upset person. And one says, well, I remember him as a very warm and embracing person. And one says, I remember him as being cold and distant. So somebody will come along and say, you know, so somebody's going to ask, are you talking about the same person? And the next person will say, well, yes, you need to understand, put things in context. When you had him in class, he was going through a very, very difficult period in his life. X was happening, Y was happening, Z was happening. And when you had him as a teacher, there was a particularly positive time in his life and this and that. He was younger, he was older, he was in a particularly, he was in a particularly good mood, and so on. Those are valid answers to that. There's another valid answer for it, and it goes like this. We're talking about a teacher who is a perfect teacher. You know, the type that only Yeshiva Greater Washington has. And this person is completely above reactions and moods, but he rather is totally focused on the classroom. And he walks in and he looks around and he has one job. His job is to get the students to understand the material, to shape and form whatever is, you know, however he wants to shape and form them, whatever it is that his goal is. He looks around and he says, okay, I need, at this, looking at this group at this time, I think they need some distance. This group needs warmth and encouragement. This group needs to bear down hard. So it's really one hanhaga, and that hanhaga is called teaching, maximizing my teaching, except due to the subjects, due to the people involved, it requires different types of, different types of approaches. But there's a big difference between saying that the change is in the teacher, so to speak, or the change is in the one who's getting it. The difference is, what does it say about the person teaching? If I say that the person himself has different tkufis, so then I'm saying that there are many people in this little box, in this little person called Reuven or Shimon or Levi, there are different people. They are part of one package, but there are sides, there are aspects to it. However, if I say that it's due to the students, then the teacher is one. The teacher is a teacher, and he uses different tools and techniques and so on. We need to understand, whenever we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's different aspects of interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it all has shaychus to us and not to him. And that's why Oyer and Choshech are not two separate anhagas, both of them coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Oyer and Choshech together are a picture. So just like if a person is looking at a black and white picture, and somebody comes over to him, looks at the picture, and he says, I'm a philosopher, let me ask you a philosophical question, a hakira. Is the picture the black shabai, or is the picture the white shabai? So I would probably answer the person, get a life, and, you know, move on. I mean, that's a nonsense. The black and white together is what gives you the picture, the black and white picture. So we need to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, we need to have Midas Yoyim V'Layel, Midas Yoyim V'Yoyim, because it's not a recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is both Yom and Layla. Rather, it's a recognition that Yom and Layla together, the circle that includes Yom and Layla together, is what projects HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vein Shayach Boi Me'inyan Menyon Agufu Mikrehem. There is nothing that we can use to describe a physical entity in any way, whether we're talking about physical realities, whether we're talking about time, place, distance, space. We have nothing of anything that describes, and a physical entity describes it. V'umishulo mikol gvul v'geder. We can't in any way impose limitations on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is... can't do this, can't do that, or and so on. Mikol yachas, you cannot make any equation that includes HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the numerator or denominator. I can't say this to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like. There is no comparing the two. And therefore, it's like, for instance, apples to apples I can compare. Apples to oranges, I can compare because they're both fruits. I can say this is sweet, this is sharp, this is crunchy, this is squishy. And I can make comparisons, even the distinctions, the comparison makes sense. Or, you know, at least I can use the comparison to mean something. But there's no way I can use the comparison to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For instance, if let's say I try to compare apples to justice, there's no comparison. It does not mean anything because there is zero in common. Apples and oranges have in common that they're fruits. They're edibles. They have its size. They have taste. I can take the things and use a common axis on which to compare them. I cannot do that with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, anything to Bria, or Mekol Chayk Tivi, or any natural law. So no natural laws apply to him. No boundaries apply to him. We can't take anything from within the Bria and impose it on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is outside the Bria. Okay, so these are the things that we can't do. And finally, V'alakol tzarech sh'teida sh'amitas inyonai u'mitzi'usa yisvarach eino museges klal. Ve'ein lo dimyon im shum echad me'inyan shebebruim, v'shum echad me'atzirim shemedam ha'dimyon mascha seichel. Ve'ein milo sotorim sheruim loy o no'oisim elo be'emes. So, how do we extend our language? When let's say I'm a biologist finds a new animal, a zoologist finds a new animal, so what he does is he starts saying, okay, it's like a horse in the fact that it runs. It's like, this animal has a horn. It's like that animal that has this. I use some common terms to endow it with certain properties, and therefore I'm able to describe it. I'm able to... I'm able to do something with it, but there's something which I can. He says But I have a problem. When I deal with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't have any type of way of using words that are common to me and common to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What am I going to say? So there is no term that in any way it makes sense. So when I find a new type of animal, I can use terms. I cannot say anything about HaKadosh Baruch Hu that will in any real fundamental way describe it. Let's give an example so we can understand a little bit better the different ways of approaching it and so on. Imagine that I find a new animal. Well, I guess today we're in the mood to find animals. So I can tell you that this animal, its vision is very weak. I can say it has no vision, it's blind. I can say it has very sharp vision. Okay, and that's that meaning the word vision and blind. So even though maybe an animal sees differently than I do, but the word blind is a correct term to apply, but just I need to take into account that it has a different way of looking and seeing things. But let's say I come along and I tell you something along the lines of justice is blind. What does justice is blind mean? It does not in any way mean anything like blind in a physical sense. But it means something. It means something as a borrowed term to describe a certain phenomena. And it's a helpful term. It's a metaphor. It's a helpful metaphor. But it's not more than a metaphor. So when I speak of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yemin Mekarev, it's got nothing to do with Yemin Mekarev in any literal sense of the word, but the picture of a dominant feature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to try to bring us to Tov and to entice us towards Tov, as opposed to imposing discipline, is an appropriate metaphor. So I have a metaphor. The metaphor is a borrowed physical term, but it's not used in the physical sense whatsoever. Whereas if I say an ant, where I say a bat is blind, so maybe, its eye structure is very different, that structure is very different, but at the end of the day, I'm speaking about a phenomena that's of the same kind. When I say justice is blind, no physical shaykh I'm talking about, I'm creating a certain image in my mind that's helpful in understanding something about justice. I do need to use terms to express things HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I do need to say that what we're doing is wrong and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also accountable. So I use a word like anger, which on a person means something we can describe. He turns red, he turns colors, he screams, he yells, he jumps, he keeps quiet. By HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing of it, we know our inner feelings when we get angry. None of that exists, but it's a metaphor that does give us a picture that's appropriate. Ki kivan she'eni tanu elo milois, yoyra liyona timog bolin bolin fray. The only words that we have that are meaningful are physical words. The only words that we have that are meaningful are words from nature. And that's the real reason why Kabbalah was off limits to people that were not worthy. So the stupid ideas are that, you might create some terrible monster because Kabbalah teaches how to create monsters and so on and so forth. That's stupid. There's another way of thinking that we know secrets about Hashem, we shouldn't know, and this and that. It's also not quite astute. What it means is that it's a very complicated balance. I have nothing intelligent to say about a Kadosh Baruch Hu if I don't use any terms. It's like hearing a teenager describe something. It was so indescribable. I mean, like, you just can't even describe it. That doesn't help you very much in understanding what in the world they're talking about. I mean, you've done nothing to be helpful in describing it. And when a poet uses physical phenomena to give me a sense of something, when he compares the calm of a person to waves rolling in gently, or whatever it is that a poet will do, it gives me a sense that I can borrow and use in a way that's helpful, in a way that I can take a certain sense of something and understand what it is in a different, in a completely different world. So the words that we use to describe Akash Baruch Hu, Kabbalah has a language. It must have a language, or else we're not saying anything. But the language is totally a metaphor. And you have to be able to take the language, feel the point in it, discard the shell totally, and transport the meaning of it to the emes. That requires a very delicate mind. Worst case scenario, the person doesn't know what you're talking about and he just wastes his time. That's a best case scenario. Worst case scenario is the person begins to think of a Kaddish problem in terms of the metaphors, and then the person is an apikoris. It's a person on Zohar Kaddish, and he talks about Kaddish problems right hand and left hand, and head and eyes and ears, and it seeps into him, and he begins to visualize it that way. The person is growing into a real apikoros. So there's that very, very careful balance. So we have words that we use, totally take the neshama out of the words and leave the shell behind, and then use it. Avazu moidor rabba lechol mash nidrosh undavin yanis barach. This is a very important hakdama. She'ein atorim v'amilos ha-misachzis lo'i misachz ha-tzad ha-emes. None of the words, terms, descriptions are going to be real. El al tzad ha-sh'ola. They're going to be borrowed metaphors. Lo'i z'losa. V'zor b'zemoit. It's fascinating because the Zohar HaKadosh, when he starts the part when he starts the Idra teaching about the Iker and Yanim that he's teaching, he starts it with Ora Isha Sheyasa Pesel Masecha and so on, Shasa Pesel and Vonakalom Ami. In other words, he starts with a warning against making any concrete God out of this, because basically the person becomes an apikoris. The benefit of learning more about a Kadosh Baruch Hu is definitely outweighed by being an Obed Avodah Zarah. So let's just recapture. The point about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the essential existence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists essentially, which means there is no way to define his non-existence. And everything else in the Bria is something that exists only because it has been endowed existence from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything in the Bria if HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot not exist, then from the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the essential existence, time is meaningless. There was no before and there's no after, just like there's no before and after on defining some essence of something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one. It cannot be compounded. We cannot look at different features of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can look at different features of ourselves who receive HaKadosh Baruch Hu differently, but not that there's any different features within HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We never, ever, no matter how much we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're never, ever getting down what he is, because he is not of the nature of anything that we know. We do, however, have the ability to use metaphors to extrapolate and gain some sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. So we can make some sense of it. We can say, so all of the Torah's descriptions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is happy with us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sad with us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry at us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in a mood to be benevolent to us. All of those are metaphors to give us over a sense of things, an appropriate sense of things, but we need to be extremely careful never to try to translate it as being literal. Okay, we'll hold it here. Any questions or points somebody want to ask? I think Rev. LaBelle explained, you just need to press on your thing if you want to talk or something like that. I think there's like, everybody's muted, but you can unmute yourself. So if anybody has any questions? Okay, so Be'ezat Hashem, next week, same time, Be'ezat Hashem. Good night.